Chrisley War.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa from the Guardian Angels was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of 12, as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us in order to do this broadcast to all of you on the 50,000 powerful watts of sound by NJDiet.com. And that's right, it's the theme song of the Mac Daddy of all radio broadcasters, Dominic Carter. Can't wait to talk to you because... I see you are back from the trial of Frankie Five Stars.
Frankie Five Stars?
And don't you remember the godfather, Frankie Five Stars? Been a loyal member of the Corleone family.
Oh, okay.
And then all of a sudden he flipped the script. He testified against Michael Corleone, a.k.a. Andrew Evilice Cuomo. And then Tom Hagen came and visited him, the peacetime consigliere for the godfather, and then eventually for the son, Michael Corleone. And remember how he had a conversation with Frankie Five Stars, remember?
Don't worry about anything, Frankie Five Angels.
Thanks, Tom.
Five Angels. You see, Stars, say, I got a little confused there. But we have a situation in which Joe Pococo, who is the leg breaker, the wartime consigliere for Andrew Evilice Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, is on trial in the U.S. District Court, downtown Manhattan, in which he's being charged all kinds of charges, shakedowns, extortion, the whole nine yards, like they do in organized crime.
Seven felony counts.
Right. But when they say shakedowns and extortion right away, what are you thinking about? I'm thinking the Bananos. I'm thinking the Genovese, the Gambinos, the Columbos, the Lucchese, the Di Cavalcantes across the Hudson River in New Jersey. Good old-fashioned Italian organized crime. Because let's face it, that's how Andrew Cuomo runs his administration and his political and personal affairs.
Wait, let's be careful now. That's not fair. Are you insinuating that Cuomo, as a prominent Italian-American elected official, that he runs the state, he runs his administration like the mob?
Absolutely. I've been saying this for years, as you know. And it was interesting because yesterday, with the start of the trial, and there was demonstrations outside by environmentalists who feel that Cuomo is a fake, phony, fraudulent hypocrite when it comes to that subject, and by Republicans. Who held up a sign, Ronzoni, sono buoni, Ronzoni is so good. And it was interesting because Ron Castorino, who's the assemblyman from Staten Island, I know him well. In fact, he handled one of my matrimonial matters, did a great job for me, took care of that ex. But he is now the chairman of the Republican Party in Staten Island. And he got upset that Republicans were outside with that sign, Ronzoni sono buoni. Ronzoni is so good. Because let's face it, Cuomo has been a spaghetti bender over the years. And Pococo has been his wartime consigliere, his leg breaker. So Ron said, look, I'm not a Cuomoite. I certainly am not supporting Pococo in this trial. But it was an insult to all Italian Americans for Republicans to be outside with that sign. And I'm saying to myself, Ron, come for me. I've been calling this guy out for years. I called out his father, Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo. I called out his father-in-law, who torched his own Key Food supermarket in East New York. and was totally affiliated with organized crime. And I've called out Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo. You know that. I have a history of that. So call me anti-Italian if all of a sudden you're going to claim because Pococo is Italian from Staten Island and Cuomo is Italian from Queens, that suddenly if you start attacking them, you're anti-Italian.
Well, first of all, you're not anti-Italian. Honestly, I can say you're not anti-anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You like to hate sometimes.
Oh, yeah, I'm a hater.
But you're not, it's not in your heart to discriminate against
someone. We know it's interesting. And you,
so you don't want to hear that.
No, but you were there on New York One when you were the voice, when you were the face for New York One, and you would be the host of the weekly debates that I would do with Herschel Barrero,
mm-hmm.
in which I would come out with the fedora on my head, the glasses.
We never knew what you would come out with.
And I would act like I was Sheldon Silver, and I would say, a.k.a. Hyman Roth from The Godfather, a.k.a. Meyer Lansky, and I would pretend like I was davening, you know.
Well, let me say this. You know that you're my man, 100 grand.
Yes.
No way around this here. Hmm. But we did face enormous pressure from the politicians because they would pull me aside and say, Dominic, you got to pull Curtis and Gerson. It's not funny. And I didn't have the heart to tell them that you guys, by far, were the most popular segment that we did on New York.
Well, thank you. But also, remember, the Sheldon Silver crowd was accusing me of being an anti-Semite over 10 years of me saying the guy was a crook. In the meantime, I'm saying, I'm an anti-Semite. My two youngest sons are Jewish. They go to Hebrew school, you know. Pretty soon, my son, Carter, will be bar mitzvahed at the age of 13. Hey, I'm an anti-Semite, really? No, I'm anti-corruption, regardless of who you are, whether
that's fair.
You're a friend or foe. If you're corrupt.
And you've shown, when you're a friend, you will still go after
them. Yeah, there's no doubt about it, because there's nothing in my mind worse than a corrupt politician, because we're trusting them, the men and women who get elected, to guard our taxes, to guard our finances, and to be available to everyone, not just to the lobbyists who want to wine them, dine them, and pocket line them. Anyway, let's open up our phone lines on that. 1-800-848-WABC. Do you believe that those Republicans who were outside of the courtroom of Joe Pococo yesterday with the start of the trial were anti-Italian because they held up a sign that said, Ronzoni sono buoni, Ronzoni is so good? But you were there today for opening remarks. I can't wait. Come on.
It was rough, brother.
Share it.
It was rough. It was rough. Pococo, for the second day in a row, there are two entrances into 40 Foley Square. And so we're set up, all the cameras. You know, when you see 10 or more cameras there and you're the newsmaker, it's not a good thing. That means we're there to ambush you.
Well, it didn't matter. I walked right into the ambushes. It's 10 cameras. I'm like landslides. My attitude would be, hey, we're missing two. Can we hold up, guys? There's two more TV crews on the way.
So there's a side way to get into the courthouse, the federal courthouse, Thurgood Marshall Courthouse. So for the second day in a row, Pococo went into the side door. So we don't have a shot of him walking in, but he did come out for lunch.
Oh.
But boy, was it rough inside court this morning.
Hmm.
The prosecution for Pococo, the prosecution team, the federal prosecutors happens to be African-American, a guy by the name of Robert Boone. And he stood up and Curtis Sliwa style. Mm. Ooh, did he let Pococo have it?
Mm.
It was not pretty. So he named the guys, something along the way you would do. He named the alleged corrupt businessman, but then he walked over to Pococo, only inches away from his face, and pointed in his face and said there was no reason for Pococo to corrupt Governor Cuomo's administration, his office. So within the first couple of seconds, Curtis Sliwa style, the prosecutor tied in Governor Cuomo.
Ah.
And, I mean, they ripped Pococo. So his defense, we spoke to his defense lawyer, Bear. His name is Bear, the counsel. This trial is going to be very interesting. Judge Valerie Caproni, no-nonsense judge.
Yes.
But for Pococo, he's off to a rough start. They let him have it, federal prosecutors.
The response to the opening remarks of the U.S. Attorney's Office obviously probably were not made while you were there. They'll probably be made this afternoon.
Right. Well, the defense has wrapped up their opening remarks. Remember, you have four defendants, so that's four different opening statements. The prosecution goes twice.
Mm.
And so you have a very diverse jury there. You have seven women, five men, five black men, Ask yourself, why do defendants always want African-Americans?
Because they're going to give them slack. Remember.
And the Indian-American.
Right.
So you got five blacks and an Indian-American.
Remember, in the first trial against John Gotti Jr., charged with kidnapping me and attempted murder.
They were charged with kidnapping you as well?
Yeah. Well, because, remember, when I jumped in the cab there.
But come on, Curtis. I know you're a tough guy. But you were not afraid that the mob wanted to kidnap you? That didn't bother you?
Nah. I grew up with the mob.
Are you serious?
I grew up with these Yadavos.
I don't think I'd be able to handle that.
These knuckle draggers. But anyway, the point was, this was the first trial. There were a total of four trials. I got four opportunities to nail Gotti Jr. He skated on technicalities. But in that first trial, with Jeffrey Lichtman as his defense attorney, the jury came back 11-1 to convict Gotti Jr. Who was the lone holdout? A black woman. I believe her name was Mabel, from the Bronx. Not far from where I started the Guardian Angels. And you get a chance to talk to the jurors, if they want to talk, both the media and people involved mm-hmm. in the case. And she was very civil, very cordial. And I said, Mabel, not for nothing. You know Gotti Jr. and his boys wanted to kill me. She said, oh, no doubt about that. I said, but why did you find him in the negative? You know, every other juror, 11-1 to convict except for you. And then she said something that obviously had escaped through the voir dire process, you know, when they're first trying to vet out jurors, like they did yesterday, where some people said, I hate corrupt politicians.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah. The judge, Judge Caproni, she pulled them in groups of 20.
Yes.
To question them one by one. And many of them in her questionnaire, they said that they hated politicians. They must listen to this show and listen to you.
Yes, I hope so.
They said they hated politicians. They said that most of them are crooks and liars, but they said that they could be fair and objective and reach a ruling based on the evidence.
Yeah, but we know that's not the case.
Right.
We know that they believe, as I do, that when these corrupt politicians like Pococo and Cuomo die of greed, that you'll have to find a Black and Decker power drill because you won't be able to close the casket. And in order to get them to take a dirt bath, you'll have to drill them right into the ground of the cemetery that they're going to be left at. That's how crooked they are. And obviously, they should be recused. They should be forced off the jury because they're going to be prejudiced as I am. In this case, Mabel, though, was not prejudiced. She said to me, I just don't believe anything that the U.S. government says. I don't trust our government. And I'm scratching my head and say, because of that, this guy is going to be able to go back to Oyster Bay Cove to his Ponderosa and prepare for a second trial, which is what he did, 11-1.
But maybe it's a good thing for you, Mr. Sliwa, that he was not convicted, because if he had been convicted of kidnapping you and of shooting you, let's just say your demise might have come along quite suddenly.
Yeah, but you see, I could have danced the tarantella right there in court. If the jury came back 12-0 to convict,
But what happens a week from then when we can't find you anymore?
Oh, don't worry. That would have made my day.
So you're telling
me... That would have been my problem.
You're telling me, and your girl Nancy is here, lovely woman, and so maybe, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't talk about this knowing that she's listening, but so you're telling me that your last seconds on earth, when you know that the mob was about to kill you, you would have still been up in their face with your last second.
Oh, yeah. From the time I was a kid in Canarsie, East New York, and I had to deal with the Lucchesis and the Gambinos, Paulie Vario and
Lord
his crew.
Help me.
Paulie Vario, you know, from
No, I don't know, because brothers don't mess with the mob.
Yeah, I'm
too much of a public figure. Everybody knows that I live in Pomona. There are no lights on my block.
But you're familiar with Goodfellas.
But by the time the state police, which is about a mile away, by the time they got to my house, it may not be good.
The Bamboo Lounge, which they torched for the insurance money, was not in Howard Beach or Ozone Park. It was in Canarsie on Avenue and Rockaway Parkway. I remember when they torched it.
Here we go.
I used to stand outside sometimes and talk trash to the Lucchese boys and say, hey, one-on-one, huh? You tough guy, one-on-one.
And what would they say?
Oh, they'd be looking, you know, they'd be gnarly. You know, they all come out. Sometimes it'd be a throwdown. And then I would figure out a way to jap them, you know, like at 3, 4 in the morning, like ninja style. They're all drunk. They're half in the bag. They're crawling out of their El Dorado, their Fleetwood.
Whoa.
And by the time they came out the door, bam, 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 I take their head right on the hood of the car. Boom. I say, oh, I'm a punk, huh, huh? Where your boys now, huh? Where your Lucchese boys now, huh?
And what if they were strapped?
Didn't matter. I already had the advantage over them, right? And they were drunk. They were half drunk. They were half in the bag. And you see, they were by themselves. Big difference than when they had their crew. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Up next, though, we have to describe for our listeners who are going to be hearing about this case now for the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
The Judge Caproni said specifically 4 to 6 weeks this morning.
How close this guy Pococo was to the Cuomos without being a blood relative. 1-800-848-WABC. Gonna accuse me of being anti-Italian because I'm busting the Ronzoni Sono Boni of Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo and his leg-breaking wartime consigliere on trial, Joe Pococo. And who is Joe Pococo? A lot of you out there, you have absolutely jack diddly squat no idea. But at the eulogy that Andrew gave for the passing of his father, Mario, this is what he had to say about him.
And my father's third son, who sometimes I think he loved the most, Joe Pococo, really did an extraordinary job, and they did an extraordinary job with his funeral, and we want to thank them.
That's particularly what the Corleone family would have said about Tom Hagen, who they adopted, remember? It wasn't the blood son. But he was the adopted son. Pretty much, Pococo was like the adopted son of Mario Cuomo and the brother of Andrew and pretty boy Chris of CNN. But tell us a little bit about why he was so infamous and feared in political circles, meaning Pococo.
Well, one, I don't know why you refer to the second brother, Christopher, as what did you call him?
Pretty boy.
Why do you call him pretty boy?
Because he's got no brains, right? Let's face it, he's a dullard.
He looks like an average-looking man to me. I don't see the pretty boy status.
Yeah, he's a pretty boy. That's why
really?
He's on TV. Hell yeah.
Okay. Well, Joe Pococo, as you know in politics, it can get very ugly.
Mm.
When you want elected officials to do something and they don't agree with you, you've got to have somebody that's going to literally force them to see it your way, meaning threaten God knows what to end their career. You get your hands dirty. Joe Pococo was that guy for Andrew Cuomo. Mm. He permitted Andrew Cuomo to smile while Pococo was the enforcer. So whenever you saw Governor Cuomo in public, Joe Pococo was there first.
Mm.
Any political rivals that the governor doesn't want in his event, it's Joe Pococo's job to arrive there first, almost like an advance man, but he was much more important than that, to make sure that your rivals are gone. So, for example, the prosecutor, Robert Boone, this morning in opening arguments, said, I'm quoting him, that Pococo didn't have to have a title because everyone knew that he was Cuomo's right hand man.
Right.
That's from a federal prosecutor less than an hour and a half ago.
But he had a title of about 8 words attached to his title.
Deputy Executive Secretary to the governor.
Never heard of that term before.
Right. But let's put it this way. There is no one closer to Andrew Cuomo or past tense than Joe Pococo. And so the press is not, it looks like the media is not going to give Governor Cuomo a pass on this one. What do I mean by that? Cuomo may not take the stand, but the first witness this afternoon is Cuomo's chief of staff, Linda Lacewell.
Oh.
And she's been described as the Minister of Defense.
She will not say anything. She will not say anything.
Well, but you know what, though? You might be right, but it's amazing when you're under oath.
Yes.
And seasoned prosecutors know the right question.
We're
going
to talk about that later because unbeknownst to all of you, guess who's already been interviewed for hours? By Special Prosecutor Mueller, Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General. You didn't know. I didn't know. Our audience didn't know. Yeah, it's a fait accompli.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Gabriel. Yes, sir.
Andale. I love that merengue. And I love Jeff Sessions. Not all the time. When he's forgetful about Kislyak, the Russian ambassador he met with three times, or he seems to be suffering the first levels of dementia, it's not good for the country. But boy, I was so proud of our attorney general last week, towards the end of the week, when he dropped a hammer on your favorite elected official, of who you are the House reporter for. Let me make sure I choose my words correctly. Bobby Menendez, the capo di tutti of all crooked officials on Capitol Hill, first as a congressman from Hudson County, then as a U.S. senator, while also controlling the Democratic Party, one of the most corrupt in all of America, in Hudson County, more corrupt in Queens County, Brooklyn, Kings County, more corrupt in Crook County in Illinois. But he's going to have to go on trial for a second time. And I must tell you, he's already looking for his House reporter.
To those in the press who did their job and did it with professionalism, and even to some of you who are actually kind, where's Dominic? I don't see him. Dominic? I believe you showed others what a professional press is all about.
Now, has he reached out to you since he's heard the bad news? He's being retried because you are like his favorite reporter.
I have not talked to Senator Menendez since that day at the trial. I did not know he was going to single me out and acknowledge me for my giving him a fair shake. I think you know my motto on journalism for 30 years is be fair to people. Treat them the same way you would like to be treated. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, I saw your reports, and you can watch Dominic every Monday through Friday if you have Fios One on RNN from 6 to 7. And you were at the courthouse like every day that there was a session.
Yes.
And you definitely were Bobby Menendez's favorite reporter. There's no doubt about it. He would always be looking for you in the crowd. And there was a huge crowd of a lot of reporters.
Yes, yes.
But he also briefly, during the trial, tried to hide behind his Latino heritage, the way Pococo and Cuomo are basically insinuating that trial against Pococo is anti-Italian. Listen to what Bobby Menendez had to say while you noticed in the video that there was Dominic Carter first up in the queue with the microphone in Bobby Menendez's face.
Certain elements of the FBI and of our state cannot understand or even worse accept that the Latino kid from Union City and Hudson County can grow up to be a United States senator and be honest.
And be honest. Well, you see, okay, I like everything up to that point. And be honest. Well, we know he's crooked. Cuban-American that he is. Bergen Line Avenue, Hudson County. He's crooked.
Wait a minute. Wait. How do we know that he's allegedly crooked?
Oh, man. We could go through a whole laundry list of things he's done to screw over the taxpayers. But what I want to know this time around, Dominic Carter, since you were so close to what was transpiring, the battles back and forth. We have a new U.S. attorney in Newark. He was one of those who protected Shamu El Jefe Chris Christie during Bridgegate. Wouldn't give up the cell phone, you know, that would have incriminated Chris Christie. In fact, he and the new FBI director, who is also one of the lead attorneys protecting Chris Christie, basically said, cell phone? What cell phone? We don't have a cell phone. And then suddenly, miraculously, it appeared after the trial. But, so I anticipate a different prosecution here. And I'm wondering if we can hear from those Dominican hookers from Punta Cana.
Wait, we'll say that again.
The Dominican hookers from Punta Cana that Bobby
Lord
Menendez used to get flown to.
Lord help me.
By his Medici, the infamous Dr. Melgen, the ophthalmologist who ripped off Medicare like there was no tomorrow.
Wait, you said Dominican hookers.
Yeah, Dominican hookers in the DR.
Okay.
And remember, they made a YouTube about Bobby Menendez. He actually came forward. And in fact, with translation, we're going to play it for you right now.
She was promised 500. And she was paid only 100. No, she said he gave money to another guy who gave her money. ¿Dónde eso pasó?
Casa de Campo.
In Casa de Campo, here in La Romana.
See, and they said collectively, the Dominican hookers said Bobby Menendez would frequent that he was Quick Draw McGraw. That meant, you know, it only took like 180 seconds for him to be satisfied. And then he wouldn't even leave them a tip in pesos, never mind U.S. dollars. Why didn't we hear from those hookers in the first trial? Why were we prevented from hearing from those hookers?
Real simple answer. The FBI that investigated this, our FBI, did not find any credible proof that he had, that Senator Menendez had engaged with underage, you forgot that part, underage alleged hookers.
The reason I didn't mention that is whether Dominicans are in Little League, they're in professional baseball, they're boxers, doesn't even have to be, you know, being hookers. They always are underage because, remember, they always add like 50 years to their calendar age. You know, a guy is playing in Little League Baseball, he's a Dominican, he's really like 21, he's shaving, he's got a beard, and he claims he's 11 years old, right? So I just totally discount that.
Well, you said with the different U.S. attorney in Newark now, but keep in mind, with Menendez, the Justice Department out of D.C. handled that prosecution. And one does have to wonder, I'm not here as this cheerleader, as you think.
But you're the House reporter for Bobby Menendez.
The jury was lined up 10 to 2 against conviction.
Okay, so there were two that would have convicted.
Right, so why would you turn around when you've spent $9 million of taxpayer dollars, the prosecution, and do it again?
Well, because there are grounds for that.
And I will say this, to indicate that Menendez will be acquitted is not guaranteed. All you need is to change the dynamics of the jury a little bit, and it could be a different story. If the feds can find a way to block Senator Lindsey Graham from testifying on a character witness for Menendez.
Or Cory. He's my very dear friend, Booker. You know, Cory Booker was there. He was sitting in, we call it the celebrity pew. You know, for mobsters, they always invite, members of the Hollyweird community, as John Gotti Sr. had when he was on trial. In the case of Menendez, it would always be Cory Booker and Lindsey Graham who would be there in the celebrity pew trying to influence the jury.
Well, it's going to be interesting the second time around. Menendez walking is not guaranteed. Let's make that very clear. And so I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be interesting. But it's like I'm like Corruption Central in terms of covering all these trials. I did Sheldon Silver.
Yes.
I'm doing Prococo right now.
Right.
I've got Menendez coming back up.
Right.
I've got Sheldon Silver's retrial.
And remember, Dean the Greek Skelos and
right.
his deadbeat son, Adam. So, man, you're going to be extraordinarily busy. But I want to ask our listeners out there with Bobby Menendez. He's running for re-election. He said he's not stepping
As of right now, unopposed.
Right. What will this do to his re-election effort? Is New Jersey so hopelessly blue now that the voters will put window shades on their eyes, cotton balls in their ears, and just pull the lever for the crook, Bobby Menendez? Or will they be somewhat jaundiced and want to see who the Republicans can come up to challenge him or any third-party lines? 1-800-848-WABC. And how about a Democrat challenging him in the primary? Since, let's face it, Bobby Menendez is tainted, no matter what you think of him. He should be much easier to beat in a Democratic primary.
But here's the problem. He's seen as fighting for the poor. He's seen as a fighter for the middle class. The new governor of New Jersey endorsed his reelection bid.
Murphy, right?
Murphy, the day that the jury was deadlocked.
Well,
so the establishment is already behind Menendez.
He's fighting to line his pockets continually and his cronies, the Hudson Party, Democratic Party machine. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
77 WABC.
I was in the land of Coffin Wood, and there I'm not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
1254. And Dominic, as you reported on the first trial against Bobby Menendez, U.S. Senator of New Jersey, that ended up with a jury 10-2 not to convict, will be retried now. Lindsey Graham, whenever he could break away from Washington, was in the celebrity pew, giving him tactical air support, like on this occasion.
I came up here to do what I thought was best for me. You know, I was asked, could you say something? What do you think about Bob? I disagree with him politically, but I think he's a very honest, honorable guy. All my interactions with Bob have been on the up and up, and he's the type of guy that if he gives you his word, he sticks with it, no matter how much pressure is put on him to back off. We need more of that, not less.
Okay, so when Lindsey Graham would sit in that celebrity pew, the first pew, behind the defense table with Bobby Menendez, along with U.S. Senator Cory Booker, reminded me of the time when John Gotti Sr. was on trial, Eastern District, downtown Brooklyn, and you had a whole host of noted Hollywood stars. James Caan, first and foremost, who starred in The Godfather. You even had the guy, the Mexican actor who played Zorba the Greek. His name escapes me momentarily. And then, naturally, you had a guy who plastic surgery has left a dollar short and a day late. But usually they were stacked like four or five. What effect? Anthony Quinn, that's right. Zorba the Greek. But what effect, if any, do you think that such well-known U.S. senators sitting there supporting Bobby Menendez had on the jury?
My opinion, that was the reason why Menendez walked.
Huh.
When you have high-profile people that are basically vouching for your character, let's face it, these are celebrities. Cory Booker, Lindsey Graham, these are people that we see on the news channels every day discussing national news. For them to appear on Menendez's behalf, it played a major role with the jury. In fact, one of the jurors told me that Cory Booker, you know, Mr. Jump into a tree and go into a burning building and so on, and living in the projects and so on, that played a major role when they saw Cory Booker on Menendez's behalf.
Well, you know, it didn't work for John Gotti Sr. finally the last time, because there was Zorba the Greek, Anthony Quinn.
We still on the mob?
Yeah. Well, he was kissing John Sr. on both cheeks. There was Jimmy Caan.
Wait, were you ever in the same courtroom with Gotti?
No, not Sr., no.
No, okay.
Then there was Mickey Rourke.
Junior, though.
Right, Mickey Rourke, you know, from, of course.
What did Junior say to you?
I testified. He just I-fornicated me and mad-dogged me. But this one I couldn't figure out. John Amos of Good Time, you know, the father of Dynamite. Why is a black guy from Englewood sitting there in court supporting John Gotti Sr.?
Money.
Oh, money. I got it.
Curtis Lewa. The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Sliwa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Sliwa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa.
Curtis Sliwa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
It must be
top 40 in Moscow, and if you don't get up and dance at the Seven Towers of Stalin, which are now casinos and discos, you get two bullets to the back of your head. This is the top song in Mother Russia, a tribute to Vladimir Putin, and it is our entry into a discussion that I didn't think that we would have, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided for us to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com. Dominic Carter in the house, and right on time, because did you know, did anybody know out there that last week, that the Attorney General of the United States, Jeff Sessions, was questioned for several hours by the special counsel's office, Robert Mueller, not only into Russian meddling in the election, but whether President Donald Trump obstructed justice. Now, I think I keep a pretty good finger on the pulse of what's going on. I hadn't heard Jack Dilley squat about this. Had you, Dominic Carter?
Well, you do. I wasn't aware of it. But are any of us really surprised at what's going on? And this is my point to our listeners that call up here at WABC and they go, oh, Sessions shouldn't have recused himself and the president is right and it was a mistake to recuse himself. Folks, during the campaign, Sessions was at President Trump's side quite a bit. So he had no other choice but to recuse himself. This is all under investigation. And I want you to think about this for a second, Sliwa. Think about this for a second. The Attorney General of the United States, is meeting with prosecutors over his role as it relates to this Trump investigation.
And there are two sections here, Dominic. There is what he knew when he was devising foreign policy for the campaign, because Jeff Sessions was in charge of putting together what would the president's foreign policy be towards other countries and Russia. And then naturally, the firing of Jim Comey as the FBI director. Mueller's people were interested in whether there was there was obstruction of justice in that regard by the president. The problem for Jeff Sessions is he seems to have memory loss at times. Now, some might say it's purposeful so that he is not put on the spot. Others might say, as I've said, based on a report that came out of the Walter Reed Army Hospital by a doctor who writes script and prescriptions for some of the old codgers in the U.S. Senate, as Jeff Sessions was before he became Attorney General, that he deals with a lot of initial stages in the U.S. Senate of dementia and Alzheimer's. And that could be Feinstein, who's in her 80s, could have been Orrin Hatch, could have been a whole bunch of different senators. They're really up there in their 70s and 80s. But just let's go back to the public sessions in which Jeff Sessions did testify and think of how he may get hooked in to possibly a perjury charge. For instance, he said before his former colleagues in the U.S. Senate, when he was under cross-examination, that he never lied in Congress.
In all of my testimony, I can only do my best to answer your questions as I understand them and to the best of my memory. But I will not accept and reject accusations that I have ever lied.
Okay. Now, remember, right there, he's saying, I didn't perjure myself.
I hear you, and I hear what our attorney general is saying. As you're going through playing these sounds and refreshing our recollection, I just want you to remember, Curtis,
yes,
what those possible jurors said in the Joe Piscopo case as it relates to elected officials. And what was that, what they said on the questionnaire?
They're crooked. Don't trust them. In fact, they're not to be trusted.
Okay. Continue, please.
All right. Now, here's Jeff Sessions, who said he could not remember the meeting with the fat slob Slabinsky Russian ambassador, Kislyak, that he had.
I did not recall this event, which occurred 18 months before my testimony of a few weeks ago. And I would gladly have reported it had I remembered it, because I pushed back against his suggestion that I thought may have been improper.
My mistake. That was with Coffee Boy Papadopoulos. In fact, let's go to cut five, since we're already on Papadopoulos' jockstrap, who has already copped a plea, and he will be testifying, obviously, in whatever direction Robin Mueller and his aide-de-camps go. Here he says he doesn't remember having the sit-down when Papadopoulos was there at the Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C., where Papadopoulos said, I'm reaching out to try to set up a one-on-one meeting between candidate Trump and President Putin.
Frankly, I had no recollection of this meeting until I saw these news reports. I do now recall that the March 2016 meeting at the Trump Hotel that Mr. Papadopoulos attended, but I have no clear recollection of the details of what he said at that meeting. After reading his account, and to the best of my recollection, I believe that I wanted to make clear to him that he was not authorized to represent the campaign with the Russian government or any other foreign government for that matter.
So he had to have his memory nourished by reading information about what he had said in that meeting, which is a bit troubling. Because if you have to have
it troubling?
Well,
isn't it rather convenient?
It is. But let's give him the benefit of the doubt that maybe he is suffering from memory loss. Reagan memory loss.
Okay. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. But should that type of individual be the Attorney General of the United States?
No, but he's not the first and won't be the last.
You could say that again.
When you're in with U.S. attorneys, as I have been in, they know the answer when they ask you the question.
The biggest
Venus flytrap. If they can't get you on collusion, or if they can't get you on, in this case, the president on obstruction of justice, if he answers questions in an evasive or I don't remember way, they could lock him in on a perjury charge, which imagine the Attorney General of the United States who recused himself from the Russian investigation, which led to his deputy then assigning Mueller to be the special prosecutor, gets hit with a perjury rap. And it all leads back to his inability to seem to remember meeting with the Russians and specifically the Russian ambassador Kislyak.
You did have communications with the Russians last year, isn't that right? Just a yes or no?
I had a meeting with the Russian ambassador, yes.
That's exactly the opposite answer you gave under oath to the U.S. Senate.
Let's go to the callers here. 1-800-848-WABC. If I'm Donald Trump, man, I am troubled that they pulled in the Attorney General, who, again, I've had a very contentious relationship with. I keep bad-mouthing him, demeaning him. He said, hey, I'll resign. And then Trump pulled back, but he takes shots at him from time to time. Let's go to Danny, who's calling from Long Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here on WABC. Danny?
Here we go. Let's play this one more time, Curtis. It's been 18 months. We haven't. But are you aware that the powers that be, whether it be the special counsel or the Senate, also just declared last week that when Jeff Sessions did not notify the campaign or the Mueller investigation that he had met with the ambassador, that they ruled he was properly not notifying them because he met with them in 2016 in his role as a senator and not as a campaign. So that was equally as important a news update, but somehow you missed that.
I'll let you go ahead first.
The Senate Investigative Committee and the House Investigative Committee is not Robert Mueller and his aides of the Special Prosecutor's Office. Remember, Mueller has more investigative abilities. He has found out more. He's had access to more materials.
The article I'm reading says that Sessions met with Mueller this week. It didn't say he was under oath. Mueller works for Sessions.
Mueller does not work for Sessions.
Right.
He's recused himself.
Right. Where are you getting that from, that he works for Sessions?
He recused himself in the investigation. He wouldn't make any decision, but he's still. But what I'm saying is that.
He works for the deputy attorney general who appointed him.
One other thing before I hang up on him, because I asked you, I want two things. Would you meet with, if you were Sessions, would you meet with Mueller at this point if you thought Mueller had, no, you would not go there unless you were required to.
You're going to say no?
Let me just say this. I just want to know if you two are equally as alarmed that it would appear the FBI and Justice Department were working undercover to investigate.
Absolutely.
So why don't we Dominic? Which is the bigger story and the bigger outrage that could potentially touch a president? That the Department of Justice and FBI were working against Donald Trump's candidacy, even with the FBI director.
We can't say that the agencies were working against his candidacy.
You have
some individuals that sent inappropriate text messages or emails to each other, and that's the extent of it.
The memo comes out that everybody wants the memo released, and it shows this, because the Republicans would not be building this up having seen this. By the way, they let everybody in Congress see it.
Danny, with much love for you, brother, are you really saying that the Attorney General of the United States being questioned by an independent prosecutor, that that's not the biggest news story?
He wasn't questioned. He met with him.
Well, what do you think? They just had a conversation over lunch? Of course it was an inquisition. Danny, have you ever been in the U.S. Attorney's office and subject?
Yeah, on the good side of things, not on the bad side. But again,
all right. But I've been there. I've been there on both sides. Both sides. I know how they operate, and I know when they ask you a question, Danny, they already know the answer.
We have. All I'm trying to say is we have been talking about this for 18 months. And CNN on Sunday, of all people, they asked. They had their person on, and she said, "We've been. All we talk about is this." And nobody cares. All I see is smokes. I believe, having read the evidence on all of these different things, that there's a much more greater chance that there will be handcuffs taken out on the secret memo side of this investigation.
And I'm not opposed to that.
I'm asking you, Dominic, to make sure we spend in the media, because when I go on certain websites, they do not even mention that a memo has come up that everybody in Congress was invited to look at. And 120 Republicans went, and only one Democrat.
We want to know where the missing texts are between the two FBI agents who were getting it on.
Not just those two.
And others. We want to know.
I just want to make sure that enough energy is spent. When this comes out, Dominic, that you would
All right, Danny. Danny. Perhaps you make a strong case there with what you just said, but I am telling you as a newsman, with the Attorney General of the United States being questioned, sitting down over coffee, whatever term you want to make this, that is a huge news story, and it's a bad sign for the President
and
of the United States.
Remember who's coming up next in the queue. Bannon. Banished from the White House. The president has said he will charge him with defamation, civil suit, although they're still communicating with Bannon, telling him what to say when he was called up on the Hill before the Senate. That's why I'm saying, you know, the senators, they're grandstanding. House members, both parties, grandstanding. They don't have the power of Mueller and the special prosecution team. Don't even compare them to the senators and congressmen, both Democrats and Republicans, who grandstand every night. You notice you don't see any representatives from Mueller's office grandstanding because they're like squirrels collecting nuts. And they're comparing, okay, what did Papadopoulos' coffee boy say?
The only thing I disagree with you, they're not like squirrels connecting nuts. They're like powerful gorillas correcting nuts.
They compare. Okay, what did Flynn say, who's cooperating? What did Papadopoulos, who was referred to as the coffee boy, say? What is Sessions saying?
And what is said on wires that we don't even know about yet?
And then when Mueller says, I'm ready to speak with the president, he's already got his case.
Right. And see, our listeners need to understand that should Mueller sit down with the president, I doubt it'll happen. Because no lawyer is going to let their client, the president of the United States, sit down with a seasoned prosecutor
let
like
Trump
that.
In there? That'd
because,
be crazy.
Because Mueller will eat him
completely.
For an appetizer.
Trump will not be able to control himself. And remember, with all the civil lawsuits he filed over the years as citizen businessman Trump, he would walk right up to the edge, you know, threatening to sue you, Dominic. It's time for depositions.
And then never sue.
And then always, you know.
I was only joking.
Yeah, let bygones be bygones. We'll settle this. Like with Trump University, remember?
Of course I remember. But when he sits down with Mueller, like you said, and you are 1,000% correct, Mueller would have dotted every I, crossed every T, wait for the president to lie, and line up
his
case.
When I was questioned, I would always pause, which, as you know, I never do. And I would think, what was that question that U.S. attorney just asked me? I take like 10 seconds. Are you okay, Curtis? Oh, yeah. Because I'm realizing they already know the answer. And they're just waiting to entrap me. And boy, Trump could so easily be entrapped because he thinks he knows it all. He thinks he's smarter than anybody in that room. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Just out today, Attorney General Jeff Sessions didn't meet for hours with Robert Mueller and his staff last week. To the phones we go. Let's go to Judy, who's calling from Brooklyn. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Judy?
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, sure.
So listen, I'm surprised at you, Dominic, and you also, Curtis, but Dominic, you're supposed to be this reporter, objective, whatever. You choose to ignore all the new facts and all the new information that's been coming out.
Such as, Judy?
Pardon?
Such as?
I have to tell you, you should be researching
this. No, I just need to know what you're talking
about. Okay. Let me tell you something. Donald Trump will not even have to talk to Mueller because, quite frankly, Mueller's whole investigation is worth nothing. It's illegitimate. It has no legitimacy. I'll tell you why. This dossier that Hillary bought and all the other people play there is full of lies. It's totally lies. And through that, they got this illegal Pfizer.
Okay, but
they
wait,
got
Judy.
This illegal unmasking for private citizens.
Judy.
And you want to know something?
Judy.
1 minute. Clapper
Judy, wait, Judy,
James
wait, we're gonna, Judy, we're going to give you a say. Just hold
Dominic,
on. So wait, Judy, we're going to give you a say.
Yeah.
So the fact that the Deputy Attorney General of the United States appointed Mueller, a special investigator, a special prosecutor, you're saying that that has no merit and that's not true?
Of course not. Yes, they're covering
up.
Wow. You know, Dominic, I don't know where you've been, but I got news for you.
Go ahead, Judy.
Clapper,
yes.
And James Comey,
right.
They both said early on, they testified early on, there's no collusion, okay? And guess what? The collusion, yes, that's on the side of the Democrats.
Judy, then why would Comey not come out publicly and exonerate the president as he had asked him to do?
I got news for you. Comey and all these FBI, the higher-up FBIs there, and Rosenstein, whatever, they are all colluding. They all wanted to get Hillary up there.
Where is that? Who appointed the Deputy Attorney General?
Who, you talking about Rothstein?
Yeah.
Who appoint? I think it was, what's his name? What's
no,
his
no.
Name?
Who's Jeff Donald Sessions? Trump?
Oh, Donald Trump? Okay.
Right.
I want to tell you something. They are all a bunch of disloyal.
Wait a second. Let me ask you a question.
Curtis,
Judy.
Listen to me.
Let
you
me
know
ask you another
well.
Question. Hold
you,
on a
you,
second. Hold
yeah.
on a second. Who met with Donald Trump when they were looking for a new FBI director? He did meet with Mueller, and he said nothing but praiseworthy things about the former FBI director, correct?
But you know what? Now a lot of information has come out, and you guys are deliberately ignoring
so,
it.
So the two inquisitors, right, the Deputy Attorney General, appointed by this president.
Have you heard of Peter Stroke?
Yes.
Have you heard of Lisa Page, McCabe?
Yes.
Have you heard of the fact that there's been this entire bunch of information coming out?
You know something, Judy? It should be fully investigated. I am troubled by that.
And but Loretta Lynch, by the way,
I'm troubled by that, Loretta Lynch. But remember, that does not excuse the president from possibly having obstructed justice. And why wouldn't
nothing.
You want that fully researched?
He
why?
Obstructed nothing.
Oh, how
Come
do you know that?
Absolutely.
How
you know what? I'm telling
Judy,
you.
Judy, how do you know that?
All the because it's all coming out now.
Oh,
wait,
it's all coming out.
See.
Everyone in the White House is in complete denial. And yet you, Judy knows. Judy knows. The FBI is wrong, and they may well be wrong.
Hey, Judy, we love you, Judy. Thank you for the call,
this is amazing not to keep an open mind and say, yeah, we should have two investigations going simultaneously. Remember I said the same thing about Hillary and the Clinton Foundation, and now there is a separate investigation by the DOJ?
And full credit
let's
to you.
Let's have full investigation. I don't care how much money it costs.
I don't agree with you.
No, but let's vet out both sides.
But as I'm listening to Judy.
And see where it leads.
And we love Judy. But as I'm listening to her, I'm counting down to myself. 3, 2, 1. When are you going to start with Hillary Clinton? And just like clockwork, right. Hillary Clinton.
No, it's like on both sides. It's like there's no room to move and say, well, maybe both are true. Could it possibly be that both are true, and you don't want to find out?
So I guess Michael Flynn copped the deal, took a deal with the feds because
he was paying so much money. They were driving him into the poorhouse. The poor guy. I noticed they weren't contributing to his defense fund. All these people, were they contributing to his defense fund? They weren't throwing nickels in there because they understood.
We love you, Judy. We love you.
The guy was tainted.
Live, local, on it. Curtis Sliwa. 77 WABC.
I'm all lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for a special offer. Guaranteed personality. I wasn't born so much as I fell out. Nobody
you recognize this song?
Me.
Sounds
we
familiar.
It's by the group that led the counterculture, The Clash. And it is I'm Lost in the Supermarket. And well applies to Jeff Bezos's latest creation to unemploy thousands, tens of thousands of Americans in the retail industry. He's opened up a brand new state-of-the-art supermarket, just opened up in Seattle. And that's where he made his wealth initially, Seattle. It's ironic how many guys have gone to Seattle to make their money. Microsoft, as you know, Gates.
Have you ever been? Seattle's a great place. Oh, yeah. I lived there for a year.
Mr. Coffee, you know, a guy who started Starbucks, so many others. They've become billionaires.
You like it? Did you like Seattle?
No, I don't like it.
Why not?
It's always gray, dreary, spritzy outside.
Too white for you?
Yeah, way too white. Way too white for me. But anyway. He's opened up this state-of-the-art supermarket in which, with the right identification, you line up, and apparently there are lines around the block. You go into the supermarket. Everything that has been put up on the shelves has not been put up there by human beings. And when it's time to check out, there's no cashiers. So it's basically like devoid of any human interaction from an employee from this brand new Amazon state-of-the-art kind of supermarket. So lines going in, but no lines coming out. And in fact, here's one of these Seattle latte sippers there being interviewed about the experience he just had.
I love the quick and easy. I mean, I was in and out of there in less than 3 minutes, I think. I just grabbed what I wanted and walked out and didn't really have to talk to anybody.
Quick and easy, they call it. And what's going to happen to all those men and women who work in the retail sector, of which there are many, because we're a service industry now. We're not, a huge manufacturing industry as we used to be. Assembly lines, you know, a lot of manual labor in factories. It's mostly service, and retail is service. And if you don't have men and women or teenagers employed to work in your Amazon supermarket, where are they going to seek employment? Plus, I notice all the politicians, they are kissing Jeff Bezos' tuchus, you know, the CEO of Amazon. He can do no wrong because he's gotten them salivating. I'm going to build some new distribution centers. Come kiss my tuchus. And they all did all over the country, even though it's going to mean elimination of retail jobs. And apparently the ones who have survived, you know, this is like a survival show.
Okay, but wait a minute now. Wait a minute. I have to check one of the comments that you made. Amazon we're talking about, right?
Yeah, Amazon.
They have one of these factories that's right on the outskirts of Gaffney, South Carolina.
You mean distribution center.
Distribution center. Right. Thank you. And Gaffney, of course, is famous because that's where the... It's a real town where House of Cards was based at. That's yes. where the Frank
Kevin
Underwood,
Spacey,
right? Kevin Spacey was from Gaffney, right. South Carolina. So all I know is in certain communities. Now, Newark is one of the locations that's being considered for this distribution center.
New York City, Boston, Austin, Atlanta.
Okay.
They got into a feeding frenzy.
All I know is in certain communities where people don't have jobs, as of right now, I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but as of right now, they're employing a lot of people that their towns would look like a desert island if not for these distribution centers.
But you
so
know,
I just want you to keep that in mind.
You know what Jeff Bezos' vision is. Deliveries will be made by drones. I don't need a human being for that. Operational centers, distribution centers, it'll be all robotic. Not going to need humans there. He's hell-bent, like others, in eliminating those kind of jobs because then you don't have to pay salaries, you don't have to pay compensation, you don't have to pay benefits. So where are people going to go
okay.
to get these jobs?
So you're telling me that this will almost be like the toll collectors in New York City.
Exactly.
Where Cuomo and others promised Easy Pass wouldn't wipe them out. Poof, they're not there anymore.
Exactly.
But just consider from the other side. I work for Curtis Sliwa now.
Yeah.
I work for your big company.
Yeah.
Are we doing a social experiment where you're responsible for employing people, or is it about making money?
So if that, in fact, is the goal of corporate America, and Trump, rightfully so, is trying to create jobs, and apparently is doing a good job at this point in doing it, he's got to confront Jeff Bezos. First off, he doesn't like him because he's now the publisher of the Washington Post, which bashes Trump on a regular basis. But got to confront him and say, hey, it can't be all technology. Where are people with limited skills going to be able to get a job if they can't get it in retail or your first job in order to establish a work record, you know, because nobody wants to employ you as a new jack. You know, you have no work record. It's oftentimes in retail as a part-time worker, you know, stocking shelves, being a clerk, being a cashier. But imagine a whole Amazon store now where maybe there's like one human being on the premises. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let's go to Giuseppe. Joe calling from Flushing. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Giuseppe.
Hi, Curtis. I'm so happy to hear that you're feeling a lot better. We were worried about you during your surgery. And Dominic, it's always a pleasure to listen to you. But I wasn't able to hear, but I think Dominic was referring to there's a place on the Thruway that Amazon just built. It's tremendous. He's got to have a large number of employees up there, you know. So the guy does, maybe these little satellite stores are not going to have a lot of people, but these distribution centers got to employ a lot of people.
Yeah, but just listen, Joe, just listen to what he will end up doing at these distribution centers. There will be robots. They will fill the orders. They will get everything out for distribution. You will have driverless trucks. Remember, that's coming. And you will have drones to make deliveries. What's the need for human beings anymore?
Well, Curtis, at my age, I don't think I'm going to see driverless drones and driverless
oh,
trucks.
Oh, yes, you are, Joe.
I may be lucky enough to make the next couple of years.
I know, but Joe, you know. It's already here. The technology is being experimented with. And all these billionaires and millionaires, Musk, all of them, they couldn't give Jack Diddley squat about the workers of America. They want to eliminate them.
But, you know, I'm with Joe. I do not, maybe I'm not good right here in terms of this, but I do not see where technology is going to replace all of us. I just don't see how a robot could find the right items to stock and then go to the correct aisle and stock it. Now, you tell me how that's going to work. That's almost as dumb as the idea that Cuomo has of driverless cars in New York City.
Did you ever work supermarkets?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I did.
You know how many mistakes were made by humans who would then take their price changer, ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk on the prices?
Right, that's true.
Or put the strips on when they were changing the price? How many times mistakes would be made? They'll justify it by saying, we program these the computers and the robots. They don't make these mistakes. They're void of human mistakes. That'll be their justification. Let's go to John in the Bronx. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Johnny?
Hey, fellas. So I'm just wondering, Curtis, if you were there back in the day when the automakers were creating the first automobiles, would you have criticized them for putting the horse and buggy drivers out of jobs?
No. No, because
what's the difference?
As we know, when you look at the Ford Motor Company, he was the first to create a livable wage so that his own workers could purchase the products coming off of the assembly line. Total difference here.
Those horse and buggy drivers probably weren't qualified necessarily to work in the assembly line.
Yeah, but they were being replaced by men and women, many who were coming up from down south, for good-paying jobs, although there was a lot of ruckus in between as the bosses like Ford and the others were trying to suppress unions and sent their goons in to bust their heads. But the reality is there were more jobs created as a result of the manufacture of cars on the assembly line than there were for horse and buggy drivers.
So company Curtis Sliwa.
Yes.
You're making product. What do you like? Tell me something.
It'll be any product.
Okay. Are you in business to make money? Or are you in business in a social experiment to employ people? Which one?
I'm there to do both.
Or do you think you can do both?
I'm there to do both. Because what we're leading to is whether it's Zuckerberg or Musk from Tesla or Jeff Bezos or all these, I will call them selfish billionaires who have their own visions, is they want a socialized system in which they're making all the money. And then people who can't find work because they have limited skills, and not everyone is going to be a skilled worker, is going to be on welfare, social assistance.
So was New York wrong to remove the toll collectors?
No, because you know how inept they were.
Right, right. Because let's be honest, they had horrible attitudes. They had a sense of entitlement.
Quite frankly, it wasn't a healthy job for them, sucking up those fumes for 8 hours.
Okay, 8 hours. But they still had to feed their families.
Yeah, but still. And that was limited. Let's face it. There's a handful of people compared to an assembly line, or more importantly, a distribution center.
Okay.
Or these personless supermarkets.
So the Transit Authority.
Yes.
You know what time it was with the Transit Authority. You walk up to a booth, and they still do. They think they have a right to have an attitude, because they had an argument.
Right.
Because Keisha had an argument with Jerome. She feels like she has a right to be disrespectful.
Why do they have to be black? Keisha and Jerome.
I didn't say they were black.
Are you trying to say they have attitude?
I didn't say they were black.
Most people named Jerome are black. Most people named Keisha. They sure ain't white.
Okay. Well, let's not put a racial component on it right now.
All right, let's give our numbers out. 1-800-848-WABC.
Curtis Lewa.
Boom!
The search for common ground begins today.
Founder of the Guardian Angels.
I got distracted. I thought Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels, was over there.
Curtis Lewa.
There's a guy in a red hat.
Host of The Drive at 5, Curtis Lewa.
We the people.
He's the New York State Reform Party chairman.
New York radio talk show host.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa.
Curtis Lewa is here.
He's really a New York City hero.
Yeah.
He's an American hero.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
Seven minutes after the hour of two, theme song for the nincompoop broadcasting company's coverage of Sunday Night Football. And during the halftime, you get your dose of analysis from one of their top broadcasters of all time, Bob Costas. I mean, nobody can question his credentials.
He's been around a very long time.
Long, long time. Obviously, he's done Olympic coverage, football coverage, other sports coverage for NBC. And he has been told he's on the shelf for the upcoming Super Bowl between the Cheaters, the New England Patriots, and the Thugs, the Philadelphia Eagles, that'll be played in Minneapolis, in Viking Stadium. He's on the shelf. Meantime, I don't know if you're aware, as we're high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities provided to us by NJDiet.com to do this broadcast to all of you on the 50,000 powerful watts of sound with Dominic Carter in the house. But your homeboy is coming under criticism, Lester Holt, because already he is doing his shows from South Korea and North Korea, the Hermit Kingdom. And he's been praiseworthy of Kim Jong mentally ill's evil seed behind the kimchi curtain of North Korea. In fact, to the point where some people watching the coverage have said, man, are you a sycophantodian lackey? And just following the propaganda line of North Korea. What's the matter? You don't want to upset them? You don't want to offend them? Because they've fed you kimchi while you're north of the DMZ?
But you know what that's about. You've been in this business a long time. You know what that's about. We can't always just look at something as, oh, why isn't he criticizing the leader of North Korea? That's about, and we have to respect it. It's rules of the game.
Oh, no,
he's trying to land an interview with him.
I know, but Lester Holt has been brought on these choreographed jaunts through North Korea, where clearly they're set up to give you the wrong impression, favorable impression, and he's just like sucking up to them. And I'm saying to myself, to that fat boy with the bad haircut, come on, Lester, you're better than that. And he is. But you see, Bob Costas decided he wasn't going to suck up to NBC, his bosses, because he came out in a commentary and was very critical about the series of head injuries that professional football players have been diagnosed after they've died, and what the future of smash mouth football in America might be.
I like football despite its violence. A lot of people like it primarily because of the violence, but I will say this, for all the drama, the excitement, the strategy, all the appealing things about football, the way football is currently played in the NFL is fundamentally unsustainable.
Now, that's an honest commentary.
That took an awful lot of courage.
No doubt.
I had to think about it and stutter over that one. It took a lot of courage because Bob Costas is taking on the hand that feeds him.
Well,
right
in fact, let's go to the audio tape again and let's play back what Bob Costas said. And afterwards, he got pimp slapped by the suits, the mockers, the muckety mucks at the nincompoop broadcasting company.
I like football despite its violence. A lot of people like it primarily because of the violence. But I will say this, for all the drama, the excitement, the strategy, all the appealing things about football, the way football is currently played in the NFL is fundamentally unsustainable.
So as much as I love American smash mouth football, and I hate, I detest, I despise the fake, phony, fraudulent, fugazi football that's spelled with a U, kickball, soccer, goal, I hate it.
You don't like soccer at all?
No. I recognize that the route that professional football is going, and to a degree collegiate football and other forms of American smash mouth football, are going to run their course because these injuries are mounting. There is the documentary evidence of how serious some of these injuries have been to these warriors, true warriors of the gridiron, the suffering they go through, the pompous assholes who own these teams, these millionaires and billionaires who, like CEOs of tobacco companies, you know, kept denying the negative effects of tobacco, specifically when it came to respiratory disease and cancers, and how this commissioner of NFL football, Goodell, has been in constant denial. And then all of a sudden they decide, for everyone who's going to be watching the Super Bowl, hey, you know, Bob Costas, he's one of our top guys. We're putting him on the shelf. We don't trust what he might say about America's national pastime. And I'm saying, come on, we've all heard and we've read about and we've discussed these injury reports and what needs to be done if this sport is to be saved in the future. Why wouldn't you allow for a proper discourse on that? Particularly now, you know, on Super Bowl Sunday, they start pre-coverage at about 3 o'clock in the morning the day before, right? You know, Saturday going into Sunday.
With top ad dollars.
Yeah, it's nonstop, the pre-Super Bowl hype. And in this case, you got the thugs, the Philadelphia Eagles, who are real headbangers. And you got the cheaters, the Brady Bunch and Coach Belichick, who've been known to do their own form of headbanging out there on the gridiron. And you say, this would be the perfect opportunity for one of these segments. All right, maybe you don't do it, you know, leading up to the kickoff, but maybe you do it at like 10 o'clock in the morning, 12 noon, you know, when you're doing all your pre-Super Bowl hype. And let Bob Costas have an educated discussion with maybe proponents who say, no, no, leave the game. I'm a purist. Leave it the way it is. And to those, and there are now many NFL players, we just discussed this yesterday.
No, wait, you're serious right now, right?
Very serious. Very serious.
Okay, well, clearly you couldn't be a CEO of a major conglomerate with that thought process.
No, you're absolutely right. I couldn't be CEO of NBC because the Matt Lauers of the world would not be running around with their sex toys harassing women on the job, and then I'm claiming, I had no idea. And I sent Savannah and Hodor out there to say, we had no idea. Meantime, while Ann Curry is saying, are you kidding? The whole atmosphere at NBC 30 Rockefeller was one of harassment. And more importantly, as we saw, Megyn Kelly, who's been interviewing a lot of women who have been subjects of victimization, wanted to interview a person who felt she wasn't being paid fair on the E! Channel, which is owned by her parent company. And so they decided, oh, you're not going to Korea. You're not going to Kimchi Land to do any of the Olympic coverage. I mean, that's retaliatory. But in the case of Bob Costas, it's not Megyn Kelly. He's got credibility.
Okay, but we don't know what's hidden in the past here as it relates to Bob Costas. We don't know how many times he's ruffled the suits. Let's face it.
Let me tell you about Bob Costas.
Let's face it, though. We're all in the public's eye, in media. We're all high maintenance.
Right, but
let's be honest.
Bob Costas is old school, when I say. I think he's out of St. Louis. He's out of the heartland. I'll tell you about Bob Costas because I learned this because, you know, I am the believer, no ticky, no washy, no talky. If you can't get advertising, you can't get commercials, you don't belong on a commercial radio or TV station.
And you live your life that way.
Like WABC, like NBC. Bob Costas would pick up the phone. He'd call up the CEO of Macy's. Say, is there anything I could do for you? We'd go out on sales calls. This is Bob Costas, right? You know, you talk to these other peacocks at NBC. You know, I don't have time. I'm too busy, you know, canoodling in my offices and harassing women and chasing trim. You think Matt Lauer went out on sales calls? Get out of here. You think any of those other stars?
But wait, should we really say chasing
trim?
Should we really say that on the radio?
I already did. And I say it continuously.
Will we be employed after this show today?
I certainly have, man.
Okay, so it's okay to say that.
Oh, it's copacetic.
Okay.
But the fact is, he is an old-school broadcaster who understands you have to be multidimensional to stay on the air. And he has proven that.
Right, but if he's old-school, then he also knows that there are times when you have to shut your mouth in terms of the corporate interest.
No, and you know I love smash-mouth football, but it is relative. Let it all hang out. Let's have the debate. This is Super Bowl Sunday. All of America is watching. It's something that's being talked about in households in America. Have former NFL players.
Not going to happen. The NFL would never sign off on that.
Oh, you mean Goodell and the billionaires who have made all kinds of money.
So what, you think they're out there for free because they're providing a product?
They say that. But the men that they hire,
who would play under all circumstances.
Well, they have a fiduciary responsibility. If they know that there is a potentiality of serious injury, then they got to come up with the ducats instead of waiting to bequeath it to their spoiled children and grandchildren now that there's no estate tax anymore. Anyway, let's go to Richard, who's calling from Staten Island. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC. Richie Rich.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good afternoon. I'm sorry.
Good afternoon, Richard. Good afternoon.
Listen, what you haven't touched on, Curtis, is that throughout the country, especially in New Jersey, high schools are having difficulty fielding high school teams. They had to even looking into combining schools because they can no longer effectively field a football team as a direct result of mothers no longer allowing their children to play football because of the preponderance of evidence against this sport.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and on top of that, if I remember just about a year ago, I watched the PBS special where that, I believe he was a Nigerian doctor who discovered this CTE.
Yes.
He said, if 10% of the mothers do not allow their children to sign up for Pop Warner, that would be the beginning of the end of football, and it's already surpassed 10%.
Well, but Richard, whether it affects the game or doesn't affect the game, it should be openly discussed, especially on Super Bowl day, in which you have like at least 12 hours of dedicated programming. Most of it is nonsense.
Curtis, there is no way the NFL on its biggest day in the year is going to allow controversial evidence to the effect of their sport. It's not going to happen. It's up to guys like Bob Costas to come forward.
Well, this sort of lends itself to what normally presidents have done and made themselves available for interviews on Super Bowl Sunday, the most watched TV day of the year. And apparently our president, Donald Trump, will not succumb to an interview on Super Bowl Sunday. You would think, boy, this would be prime time. He could bring up the subject again of players taking a knee and all that. So they don't want that either, apparently.
Well, remember, he did. I don't mean to cut you off, Richard, but the president didn't really have an end-of-the-year news conference. But I still think it remains to be seen about whether or not he'll sit down with Fox News at the Super Bowl. I know he sat down. Who's the big anchor man that just was forced? O'Reilly.
Right.
Remember now, the president made that comment about there are. He said, "You think our country is so innocent?" It was in that interview with O'Reilly.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but the most famous of all halftime interviews of the Super Bowl was Hillary Rodham Clinton saying, "I'm standing by my man." Remember that?
Yes.
While the whole country was watching.
Yes.
She's saying, "I'm not dropping Bill, my husband, like a bad habit." Standing by my man.
And I contend that was the right thing for her to do. I have a problem with us in society telling people what they should do with their marriages. That I don't get to tell you what you should do with your relationship.
But that interview was not football related.
Right, it was not.
Many of the halftime interviews with our sitting presidents have not been football related.
Right.
These are football-related subjects, taking a knee when the national anthem is being played and serious brain injuries that result.
So you think the NFL is going to give that type of forum to the president where God only knows what he might call an NFL football player? We know what he said in Alabama as it relates to...
Understood. Okay, but he would also support the owners and claim, hey, what? What's the matter? They don't hit as hard as they used to. That's what he said publicly. Hey, it's become a pansy sport. Did Donald Trump ever play smash mouth football?
No, but Donald Trump wanted to buy an NFL team, and they would not let him into the club, so he was forced to buy a USFL team.
Our president is so macho, and I say to myself, did you ever play smash mouth football?
The president did say that he was a great, get it? It's always great, but he was a great baseball player.
Yeah,
that's what he was.
He was quite good at the New York State Military Academy, where John Gotti Jr. was spent because his father, John Sr., couldn't handle him, and Fred couldn't handle Donald Trump. That's why they send you to military academy.
I'm just curious. How many black kids were in that school? Do you know? I'm just curious.
I know there were a lot of Italian guys. That's where they get sent. You know, it's called... attitudinal readjustment for the sons of wise guys.
LaSalle Military Academy
out in Long Island.
I'm just curious.
Used to have a whole wing. They called it the Italian American Civil Rights League for the sons of mobsters choking on their lobsters. Our number is 1-800-848-WABC.
He knows the city. Live, local, on it. Curtis Lewa, 77 WABC.
I'm Dominic. I know you're a frequent flyer as a guest lecturer around the country. And I'm sure you've queued up and after going through Checkpoint Charlie, the TSA, you're getting ready to board your flight. And you're looking at your fellow passengers, many of whom will have with them either a dog. You know, they'll claim, oh, it's my comfort animal.
Now, you know that dogs and cats are my soft spot.
My emotional animal.
Oh.
But then all of a sudden, you'll see Porky Pig there.
Wait, what?
Yeah, pigs.
Wait, what?
Pigs.
You started the conversation saying that when you're flying, and now you're telling me about pigs? What are you talking about?
Yeah, because there are some people who have as emotional support animals... pigs, who they can fly with.
Wait, what?
Yeah, pigs.
Wait, people have pigs as emotional support.
Yeah, Porky pigs. And then there are others who have parrots. You know, Polly want a cracker.
Right.
Polly want a cracker.
I had several parakeets, so be careful. But wait a minute. Wait. Back to the pigs. I thought it's illegal to have certain animals in a domestic type situation.
Well, you see... Delta Airlines has said enough is enough. They are the largest airline carrier in the United States. And they have said, look, there are these service and comfort animals that people are boarding planes with. Just to give you an example, we flew 250,000 animals in those categories last year. That's up 150% from 2015. While all of a sudden our incidents of biting and defecating have nearly doubled since 2016. That meant particularly dogs biting other passengers, taking a dump, you know, in the aisle, and then all of a sudden, you know, they just recirculate the smell, you know, through the air system. And people have to deal with this. And apparently, what people are doing now is, instead of going to a physician or a mental health professional and getting a real letter claiming that they have to have their comfort animal because of their disability.
Wait, are you serious that in some cases pigs can be a comfort animal? Or are you giving me a hard time here?
No, Porky Pig, absolutely.
What, little baby pigs or big pigs?
Both. And in fact, if you're from Iowa where there are more pigs than people, you'd rather have a pig on the airline than a human being because you're used to slopping the hogs. Suey, suey, suey. And now you can actually go online and you can download forged particular what look like very professional letters done by doctors and mental health care professionals that provide a question-style exam, gives you the answers, it's signed, it's documented. Other than being notarized, you're good to go. And you show up with your dogs who are blocking beverage carts. Cats are urinating on seats. Ducks are wandering the aisles. And people are ending up getting into fights as a result of the encroachment of the animals on their space. Yeah. Can you believe it's gotten to this?
Okay, but wait. I thought that there were weight restrictions. And what animal was just that?
That's a turkey, which is one of the dumbest animals alive. And
okay, but wait.
People will say,
but wait,
oh, that's
wait.
My comfort animal.
No, there's no way in the world. Have you ever seen wild turkeys?
Yeah.
One of the funniest stories that my poor wife that I ever experienced. We had just sold the house in Rockland. We're staying in a temporary house, and this African American woman from Harlem did not know that there were wild turkey in the area. Do you know turkeys are some of the ugliest animals? And when they're like walking around and they're big,
yep.
They can be very. There's no way in the world someone can say a turkey is a comfort animal.
Stupid, too, I might add, the turkeys, the wild turkeys. Anyway.
They ran her right back into the house. I've never stopped laughing.
They
about
claim
that
all these animals are emotional support animals, comfort animals.
How about a bear? How about an alligator?
Including a miniature horse. You know, a little pygmy horse. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what experience have you had when you've gotten on airlines and you've seen these comfort animals, these emotional support animals? Do you support your fellow passengers who increasingly are bringing more and more of these animals on and insisting it's their right?
But you can't bring a big dog. You can bring a small dog.
Oh, wait
like
a
Dolce. Like Dolce. Like no, my no, Dolce.
Wait. There was a Labrador mix.
Labradors are pretty big.
And apparently there was a guy on a Delta flight from Atlanta to San Diego. He had the middle seat. And he had to get through the guy who was sitting there with this sizable dog, this Labrador mix, on his lap. So as soon as he crossed over the guy in order to get to his seat, this Labrador lunged at him, attacked him for about 30 seconds to a minute. He had to have 28 stitches. He's got scars that are still visible today. He's obviously filed quite the lawsuit against Delta Airlines. But the point being is that I myself have seen all these animals. I'm wondering, could all these people be in need of emotional support animals and comfort animals? Or is this just a ruse to transport your pet so you don't have to put them in a little box or a carry case and put them in storage? Our number is 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And if you happen to work for the airlines, of which we have many listeners, whether you're a steward or a stewardess, whether you're an airline pilot, whether you have to check these animals on along with their owners, what experiences have you had? 1-800-848-WABC. And as a steward or a stewardess, if all of a sudden the dog decides to take a dump right in the middle of the aisle, do they give you a pooper scooper to just clean it up? What do you do? You pull out Windex, you know, like a Greek, and you just start spritzing it?
So wait a minute now. So we can't drink the coffee on the airplane because that water's redone or it's
not recycled.
Right. So don't drink the coffee.
Right.
The flight attendant, do we still call them flight attendants?
I call them stewards and stewardesses.
They may have a major attitude, and we've got to deal with it, and they can kick you off the plane.
And overhead luggage. You know, people always bring in on luggage that are too big for the overhead compartments, and they want to start fights with the airline attendants and, if necessary, the captain of the ship. Anyway, let's go to the phones, 1-800-848-WABC. First up in the queue is Tina, who's calling from Orange County. Welcome to Curtis and Dominic Carter here at WABC, Tina.
Hi. My comment is specifically to JetBlue. I was traveling from California to New York last summer, and there are six of us in the family. One of the girls has severe allergies, and we were told that there were two comfort animals coming onto the plane with a woman on leashes. I saw the dogs, not in crates. They were small dogs, but they were on a leash. And we said, and she was going to be seated near us. So we said we didn't all have to sit together, but could we be seated, or at least this girl, not near any of the animals? That would be impossible because there were seven dogs on that flight.
Seven dogs? It's like a kennel.
There were going to be seven dogs, and there was nothing we could do about it. If we wanted a different flight, they would have put us on a different flight for no charge.
Got it.
It was going to be at 10 o'clock in the evening, leaving San Francisco, which would have put us with three children into New York really late.
Oh, you probably were on the same flight with Michael Savage and his dog Teddy, who was coming here to the East Coast for an appearance. That probably was dog number seven with his owner, Michael Savage.
Is his dog a comfort animal?
For him, it is. I mean, I think he treats his dog better than he treats other human beings, which is not unusual for a lot of people. They're friendlier with their animal friend than they are with their real human friends. And then again, you point out allergies. All of a sudden, you're sneezing up a storm. How do they deal with that if you have an allergy and all of a sudden you got all these dogs, a kennel on board?
By the time we got off the flight, the poor girl, she was 13 at the time, she couldn't breathe because of all of the pets.
But they won't give you peanuts because they're afraid somebody on board has an allergy to peanuts, which used to be the tradition.
I said that on a flight recently. Sorry, we will not be serving peanuts. Someone on the plane has allergies.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, you know, what about my poor kid who has no rights because she has allergies?
Yeah, think of it. They always have a people distress, which I always used to take when I was organizing the Guardian Angels all over the country.
Do you remember People's Express?
People's Distress, because when you went to the North Terminal in Newark International Airport, you would queue up. You would pay outrageously reduced monies, like $19 to Norfolk one way.
From Syracuse to New York City, it was $29.
Right. You just wait a month of Sundays for the flight to get there. And the captain would also be like processing tickets and luggage. And he would come around and you say, who's flying the airplane? While he'd be throwing you these cheap peanuts and then this generic cola, you know, like CNC cola. You know, some generic cola, and you would say, oh, my God, I'm really getting for what I'm paying for. 1-800-848-WABC. Why not chimpanzees or orangutans as emotional support animals or comfort animals? All you got to do is put a pair of Depends on them, and they're good to go.
Michael Jackson style?
Oh, yeah. Hey, whatever happened to Bubbles, right? I think he sent him away to some kind of animal sanctuary in Florida. Make yourself useful here, Justin Beloved. Find out whatever happened to Bubbles, Michael Jackson's chimpanzee that he exiled to somewhere in Florida, huh? Come on, Justin.